Hello, angels. I'm super fucking excited to be here. Last night, we finished our reading of Dante Alighieri's The Divine Comedy from the book Inferno. We haven't finished the other two books, and I do intend to read them. I do intend to read Purgatorio and Paradiso, but I need a little bit of a break from anything that was originally written in Latin. So I picked up a different book. A couple weeks ago, I went on a little self-help, depressive splurge of I want books for me because it will make me happy. And honestly, it did. It made me happy. Retail therapy was good. I picked up a couple books. I talked about them in the past. And the one that my Discord chose to read next is The Giver by Lois Lowry. I read this before in high school, but in a couple months, I will have been out of high school for 10 fucking years because I am old. So it's been a long time since I've read it. I know that it's part of a four-part series. I know that it is a very good book. I remember just a little bit about it. And I'm excited to read it again. I can't promise you that I'm going to read the other ones because I don't own them. But if you guys really like this one and you'd like to hear the rest of them, I would be happy to do it. I am actively looking for a pretty copy of Gossamer. So if any of you have any particular favorite copies, like with a beautiful cover, or maybe like a hardback copy, that would be great. Send it my way. My DMs are open. So I'm not going to read the introduction of this because this is a 20th anniversary edition, and it's just a bit where Lois talks about, you know, this book coming out 20 years ago. So I don't really feel compelled to read it, but we're going to start at chapter one. I don't know how long I'm going to go because this is in chapters, and obviously the chapters are longer word count than the cantos and in Inferno. But it is also a significantly easier read. I anticipate tripping over my words a lot less, but still don't treat this like an audiobook. I'm, you know, not that good. This will be a lot easier, though. I'm starting on chapter one. You will know now by the title where I ended up, because I don't know how long I'm going to read. But I'm in bed. I'm cozy. I had my glasses on. I have my candle lit. It smells like cinnamon in here. I have something to drink. The window was just open for a little bit, so it's nice and cold, and I'm cozy under my blankets. And I suggest you do the same. But I'm going to get started. So without further ado, The Giver by Lois Lowry, chapter one. It was almost December, and Jonas was beginning to be frightened. No, wrong word, Jonas thought. Frightened meant that deep, sickening feeling of something terrible about to happen. Frightened was the way he had felt a year ago when an unidentified aircraft had overflown the community twice. He had seen it both times. Squinting towards the sky, he had seen the sleek jet, almost a blur at its high speed, go past, and a second later, heard the blast of sound that followed. Then, one more time a moment later, from the opposite direction, the same plane. At first, he'd been only fascinated. He'd never seen an aircraft so close, for it was against the rules for pilots to fly over the community. Occasionally, when supplies were delivered by cargo planes to the landing field across the river, the children rode their bicycles to the riverbank and watched, intrigued, the unloading and then the takeoff directed to the west, always away from the community. But the aircraft a year ago had been different. It was not a squat, fat-bellied cargo plane, but a needle-nosed single-pilot jet. Jonas, looking around anxiously, had seen others, adults as well as children, stop what they were doing and wait. Confused, for an explanation of the frightening event. Then, all of the citizens had been ordered to go into the nearest building and stay there. Immediately, the rasping voice through the speakers had said, leave your bicycles where they are. Instantly, obediently, Jonas had dropped his bike on the side of the path behind his family's dwelling. He had run indoors and stayed there, alone. His parents were both at work, and his little sister Lily was at the daycare center, where she spent her after-school hours. Looking through the front window, he had seen no people, none of the busy afternoon crew of street cleaners, landscape workers, and food delivery people who usually populated the community at that time of day. He saw only the abandoned bikes here and there on their sides. An upturned wheel on one was still revolving slowly. He had been frightened then. The sense of his own community silent, waiting, had made his stomach churn. He had trembled. But it had been nothing. Within minutes, the speakers had crackled again, and the voice, reassuring now and less urgent, had explained that a pilot in training had misread his navigational instructions and made a wrong turn. Desperately, the pilot had tried making his way back before his error was noticed. "Needless to say, he will be released," the voice had said, followed by silence. There was an ironic tone to that final message, as if the speaker found it amusing, and Jonas had smiled a little, though he knew what a grim statement it had been. For a contributing citizen to be released from the community was a final decision, a terrible punishment, an overwhelming statement of failure. Even the children were scolded if they used the term lightly at play, jeering at a teammate who missed a catch or stumbled in a race. Jonas had done it once, and had shouted at his best friend, "That's it, Asher, you're released!" When Asher's clumsy error had lost a match for the team, he had been taken aside for a brief and serious talk by the coach, had hung his head with guilt and embarrassment, and apologized to Asher after the game. Now, thinking about the feeling of fear as he pedaled home along the river path, he remembered for a moment of palpable, stomach-sinking terror when the aircraft had streaked above. It was not what he was feeling now, with December approaching. He searched for the right word to describe his own feeling. Jonas was careful about language. Not like his friend Asher, who talked too fast and mixed things up, scrambling words and phrases until they were barely recognizable and often very funny. Jonas grinned, remembering the morning that Asher had dashed into the classroom, late as usual, arriving breathlessly in the middle of the chanting of the morning anthem. When the class took their seats at the conclusion of the patriotic hymn, Asher remained standing to make his public apology as was required. "I apologize for inconveniencing my learning community," Asher ran through the standard apology phrased rapidly, still catching his breath. The instructor and class waited patiently for his explanation. The students had all been grinning because they had listened to Asher's explanation so many times before. "I left home at the correct time, but when I was riding along near the hatchery, the crew was separating some salmon. I guess I got distraught watching them. I apologize to my classmates," Asher concluded. He smoothed his rumpled tunic and sat down. "We accept your apology, Asher," the class recited in standard response in unison. Many of the students were biting their lips to keep from laughing. "I accept your apology, Asher," the instructor said. He was smiling. "And I thank you, because once again you have provided opportunity for a lesson in language. Distraught is too strong an adjective to describe salmon viewing." He turned and wrote "distraught" on the instructional board before he wrote "distracted." Jonas, nearing his home now, smiled at the recollection, thinking still, as he wheeled his bike into its narrow port beside the door. He realized that frightened was the wrong word to describe his feelings, now that December was almost here. It was too strong an adjective. He had waited for a long time for his special December. Now that it was almost upon him, he wasn't frightened, but he was eager, he decided. He was eager for it to come, and he was excited, certainly. All of the 11s were excited about the event that would be coming so soon. But there was a little shudder of nervousness when he thought about it and what might happen. Apprehensive, Jonas decided. That's what I am. "Who wants to be the first tonight for feelings?" Jonas's father asked at the conclusion of their evening meal. It was one of the rituals, the evening telling of feelings. Sometimes Jonas and his sister, Lily, argued over turns, over who would get to go first. Their parents, of course, were part of the ritual. They, too, told their feelings each evening, but, like all parents, all adults, they didn't fight and wheedle for their turn. Nor did Jonas tonight. His feelings were too complicated this evening. He wanted to share them, but he wasn't eager to begin the process of shifting through his own complicated emotions, even with the help that he knew his parents could give. "You go, Lily," he said, seeing his sister, who was much younger, only 7, wiggling with her impatience in her chair. "I feel very angry this afternoon," Lily announced. "My child care group was at the play area, and we had a visiting group of 7s, and they didn't obey the rules at all. One of them, a male, I don't know his name, kept going right to the front of the line for the slide, even though all the rest of us were waiting. I felt so angry at him. I made my hand into a fist, like this." She clenched up a fist, and the rest of the family smiled at her small, defiant gesture. "Why do you think the visitors didn't obey the rules?" Mother asked. Lily considered and then shook her head. "I don't know. They acted like animals," Jonas suggested. He laughed. "That's right," Lily said. laughing too, like animals. Neither child knew what the word meant exactly, but it was often used to describe someone uneducated or clumsy, someone who didn't fit in. "Where were the visitors from?" Father asked. Lily frowned, trying to remember. Our leader told us when he made our welcome speech, but I can't remember. I guess I wasn't paying attention. It was from another community. They had to leave very early, and they had their midday meal on the bus. Mother nodded. Do you think that it's possible that their rules may be different? And so they simply didn't know what your play area rules were? Lily shrugged and nodded. I suppose. You've visited other communities, haven't you? Jonas asked. My group often has. Lily nodded again. When we were sixes, we went and shared a whole school day with a group of sixes in their community. How did you feel when you were there? Lily frowned. I felt strange, because their methods were different. They were learning usages that my group hadn't learned yet, so we felt stupid. Father was listening with interest. I'm thinking, Lily, he said, about the boy who didn't obey the rules today. Do you think it's possible that he felt strange and stupid, being in a new place with rules he didn't know about? Lily pondered that. Yes, she said finally. I feel a little sorry for him, Jonas said, even though I don't know him. I feel sorry for anyone who's in a place where he feels strange and stupid. How do you feel now, Lily? Father asked. Still angry? I guess not, Lily decided. I guess I feel sorry for him, and sorry I made a fist. She grinned. Jonas smiled back at his sister. Lily's feelings were always straightforward, fairly simple and usually easy to resolve. He guessed that his own had been too when he was a seven. He listened politely, though not very attentively, while his father took his turn, describing a feeling of worry that he'd had that day at work, a concern about one of the new children who wasn't doing well. Jonas's father's title was a nurturer. He and the other nurturers were responsible for all the physical and emotional needs of every new child during its earliest life. It was a very important job, Jonas knew, but it wasn't one that interested him very much. What gender is it? Lily asked. Male, Father said. He's a sweet little male with a lovely disposition, but he isn't growing as fast as he should, and he doesn't sleep soundly. We have him in the extra care section for supplementary nurturing, but the committee's beginning to talk about releasing him. Oh, no, Mother murmured sympathetically. I know how sad that must make you feel. Jonas and Lily both nodded sympathetically as well. Release of new children was always sad, because it hadn't had a chance to enjoy its life within the community yet. And they hadn't done anything wrong. There was only two occasions of release, which were not punishment. Release of the elderly, which was a time of celebration for a life well lived, and a release of a new child, which was always brought a sense of what could we have done. This was especially troubling for the nurturers, like Father, who felt they had failed somehow. But it happened very rarely. Well, Father said, I'm going to keep trying. I may ask the committee for permission to bring him here at night, if you don't mind. You know what the night crew nurturers are like. I think this little guy needs something extra. Of course, Mother said, and Jonas and Lily nodded. They had heard Father complain about the night crew before. It was a lesser job, night crew nurturing, assigned to those who lacked the interests or skills or insight for the more vital jobs of daytime hours. Most of the people on the night crew had not even been given spouses because they lacked, somehow, the essential capacity to connect with others, which was required for the creation of a family unit. Maybe we could even keep him, Lily suggested sweetly, trying to look innocent. The look was fake, Jonas knew. They all knew. Lily, Mother reminded her, smiling, you know the rules. Two children, one male, one female, to each family unit. It was written very, very clearly in the rules. Lily giggled. Well, she said, I thought maybe just this once. Next, Mother, who held a prominent position at the Department of Justice, talked about her feelings. Today, a repeat offender had been brought before her, someone who had broken the rules before, someone who she had hoped had been adequately and fairly punished, and who had been restored to his place, his job, his home, his family unit. To see him brought before her a second time had caused her an overwhelming feelings of frustration and anger, and even guilt that she hadn't made a difference in his life. I feel frightened, too, for him, she confessed. You know that there's no third chance. The rules say that if there's a third transgression, he simply has to be released. Jonas shivered. He knew it happened. There had even been a boy in his group of 11s whose father had been released years before. No one ever mentioned it. The disgrace was unspeakable. It was hard to imagine. Lily stood up and went to her mother. She stroked her mother's arm. From his place at the table, Father reached over and took her hand. Jonas reached for the other. One by one, they comforted her. Soon, she smiled, thanked them, and remembered that she felt soothed. The ritual continued. Jonas? His father asked. Your last tonight. Jonas sighed. This evening, he almost would have preferred to keep his feelings hidden, but it was, of course, against the rules. I'm feeling apprehensive, he confessed, glad that the appropriate descriptive word had finally come to him. Why is that, son? His father looked concerned. I know there's really nothing to worry about, Jonas explained, and that every adult has been through it. I know you have, father, and you too, mother. But it's the ceremony that I'm apprehensive about. It's almost December. Lily looked up, her eyes wide. The ceremony of 12, she whispered in an awed voice. Even the smallest children, Lily's age and younger, knew that it lay in the future for each of them. I'm glad you told us of your feelings, father said. Lily, mother said, beckoning the little girl, go on now and get into your nightclothes. Father and I are going to stay here and talk to Jonas for a while. Lily sighed, but obediently she got down from her chair. Privately? She asked. Mother nodded. Yes, this will be a private one with Jonas. I think I'm going to read chapter 2, but I'm just going to get a quick drink. Because my mouth is a little dry. Okay. All right. Chapter 2. Jonas watched as his father poured a fresh cup of coffee. He waited. You know, his father said finally, every December was exciting to me when I was young. And has been for you and Lily, too, I'm sure. Each December brings such changes. Jonas nodded. He could remember the Decembers back when he had become, well, probably a 4. The earlier ones were lost on him. But he had observed them each year, and he remembered Lily's earliest Decembers. He remembered when his family received Lily, the day she was named, and the day that she had become a 1. The ceremony for 1s was always noisy and fun. Each December, all the new children born in the previous year turned 1, 1 at a time. There were always 50 in each year's group, and none of them had been released. They had been brought to the stage by the nurturers who had cared for them since birth. Some were already walking, wobbly in their unsteady legs. Others were no more than a few days old, wrapped in blankets held by their nurturers. I enjoy the naming, Jonas said. His mother agreed, smiling. The year we got Lily, we knew, of course, that we'd receive our female, because we'd made our application and been approved. But I had been wondering what her name would be. I could have sneaked a look at the list prior to the ceremony, Father confided. The committee always makes a list in advance, and it's right there on the office table in the nurturing center. As a matter of fact, he went on, I feel a little guilty about this, but I did go in the afternoon and look to see if this year's naming list had been made yet. It was right there in the office. And I looked up the number 36. That's the little guy I've been concerned about, because it occurred to me that it might be enhancing his nurturing if I could call him by his name. Just privately, of course, when no one else is around. Did you find it? Jonas asked. He was fascinated. It didn't seem like a terribly important rule, but the fact that his father had broken a rule at all awed him. He glanced at his mother, the one responsible for adherence to the rules, and was relieved that she was smiling. His father nodded. His name, if he makes it to the naming without being released, of course, is to be Gabriel. So I whisper that to him when I feed him every 4 hours, and during exercise and playtime, if no one can hear me. I call him Gabe, actually, he said and grinned. Gabe, Jonas tried out. A good name, he decided. Though Jonas had only become a 5 the year they acquired Lily and learned her name, he remembered that excitement, the conversations at home, wondering about her, how she would look, who she would be, how she would fit into their established family unit. He remembered climbing onto the steps of the stage with his parents, his father by his side that year instead of with the nurturers, since it was his year to be given a new child of his own. He remembered his mother taking the new child, his sister, into her arms while the document was read to the assembled family units. New child 23, the name had read. Lily. He remembered his father's look of delight when his father had whispered, "She's one of my favorites. I was hoping for her to be the one." The crowd had clapped and Jonas had grinned. He liked his sister's name. Lily, barely awake, had waved her small fist and then had stepped down. Then they had stepped down to make room for the next family unit. "When I was in 11, his father said now, "as you are, Jonas, I was very impatient, waiting for the ceremony of 12. It was a long 2 days. I remember that I enjoyed the ones, as I always do, but I didn't pay much attention to other ceremonies except for my sister's. She became a 9 that year and got her bicycle. I'd been teaching her to ride mine, even though technically I wasn't supposed to." Jonas laughed. It was one of the few rules that was not taken very seriously and was almost always broken. The children all received their bicycles at 9. They were not allowed to ride bicycles before then, but almost always the older brothers and sisters secretly taught the younger ones. Jonas had already been thinking about teaching Lily. There was talk about changing the rule and giving the bicycles at an earlier age. A committee was studying the idea. When something went to a committee for study, people always joked about it. They said the committee members would become elders before the time the rule change was made. Rules were very hard to change. Sometimes if it was a very important rule, unlike the one governing the age for bicycles, they would have to go, eventually, to the receiver for a decision. The receiver was the most important elder. Jonas had never seen him, that he knew of. Someone in a position of such importance lived and worked alone, but the committee would never bother the receiver with a question about bicycles. They would simply fret and argue about it themselves for years until the citizens forgot that it had ever gone to them for study. His father continued. So I watched and cheered on when my sister Katya became a 9 and removed her hair ribbons and got her bicycle, father went on. Then I didn't pay much attention to the 10s and 11s. And finally, at the end of the second day, which seemed to go on forever, it was my turn at the ceremony of 12. I have a hiccup. I lied to you, it was a burp. Jonas shivered. He pictured his father, who must have been a shy and quiet boy, for he was a shy and quiet man, seated with his group, waiting to be called to the stage. The ceremony of 12 was the last of the ceremonies, the most important. I remember how proud my parents look. My sister, too, even though she wanted to be out riding the bicycle publicly. She stopped fidgeting and was very still and attentive when it came to my turn. But, to be honest, Jonas, his father said, for me there was not an element of suspense that there is for you with your ceremony, because I was already fairly certain of what my assignment was to be. Jonas was surprised. There was no way, really, to know in advance. It was a secret selection made by the leaders of the community, the Committee of Elders, who took the responsibility so seriously that there were never even any jokes made about assignments. His mother looked surprised, too. How could you have known? She asked. His father smiled his gentle smile. Well, it was clear to me, and my parents later confessed that it had been obvious to them, too, what my aptitude was. I had always loved the new children more than anything. When my friends in my age were holding bicycle races or building toy vehicles or bridges with their construction sets or... All the things I do with my friends, Jonas pointed out, and his mother nodded in agreement. I always participated, of course, because as children we must experience all of those things. And I studied hard in school, as you do, Jonas, but again and again, during my free time, I found myself drawn to the new children. I spent almost all of my volunteer hours helping out in the nurturing center. Of course, the elders knew that from their observation. Jonas nodded. During the past hour, he had been aware of the increasing level of observation. In school, at recreation time, and during volunteer hours, he had noticed the elders watching him as in the other 11s. He had seen them taking notes. He knew, too, that the elders were meeting for long hours with all of the instructors that he and the other 11s had during their years of school. So I expected it, and I was pleased, but not at all surprised when my assignment announced was a nurturer. Father explained. Did everyone applaud, even though they weren't surprised? Jonas asked. Of course. They were happy for me, and that my assignment was what I wanted most. I felt very fortunate, his father smiled. Were any of the 11s disappointed your year? Jonas asked. Unlike his father, he had no idea what his assignment would be. But he knew that some would disappoint him. Though he respected his father's work, nurture would not be what his wish was. And he didn't envy laborers at all. His father thought, no, I don't think so. Of course, the elders are so careful in their observations and selections. I think it's probably the most important job in our community, his mother commented. My friend Yoshiko was surprised by her selection as a doctor, father said, but she was thrilled. And let's see, there was Andre. I remember that when we were boys, he never wanted to do physical things. He spent all of his time, his recreation time he could, with his construction set, and his volunteer hours were always on building sites. The elders knew that, of course. Andre was given the assignment of engineer, and he was delighted. Andre later designed the bridge that crosses the river to the west of town, Jonas' mother said. It wasn't there when we were children. There are very rarely disappointments, Jonas. I don't think you need to worry about that, his father reassured him. And if there are, you know there's an appeal process. But they all laughed at that. An appeal went to a committee for study. I worry a little about Asher's assignment, Jonas confessed. Asher's such fun, but he doesn't have any serious interests. He makes a game out of everything. His father chuckled. You know, I remember when Asher was a new child at the nurturing center before he was named. He never cried. He giggled and laughed at everything. All of the staff really enjoyed nurturing Asher. The elders know Asher, Mother said. They'll find exactly the right assignment for him. I don't think you need to worry about him. But Jonas, let me warn you about something that may not have occurred to you. I know I didn't think about it until after my ceremony of 12. What's that? Well, it's the last of the ceremonies, as you know. After 12, age isn't important. Most of us lose track of how old we are as time passes, though the information is in the Hall of Open Records, and we could go look it up if we wanted to. What's important is the preparation for adult life and the training you'll receive in your assignment. I know that, Jonas said. Everyone knows that. But it means, his mother went on, that you'll move into a new group, and each of your friends will. You'll no longer be spending your time with your group of 11s. After the ceremony of 12, you'll be with your assignment group, with those in training. No more volunteer hours, no more recreation hours, so your friends will no longer be as close. Jonas shook his head. Asher and I will always be friends, he said firmly, and there will still be school. That's true, his father agreed, but what your mother said is true as well. There will be changes. Good changes, though, his mother pointed out. After my ceremony of 12, I missed my childhood recreation. But when I entered my training for law and justice, I found myself with people who shared my interests. I made friends on a new level, friends of all ages. Did you still play at all after 12? Jonas asked. Occasionally, his mother replied, but it didn't seem as important to me. I did, his father said, laughing. I still do. Every day at the nurturing center. I play bounce on the knee and peekaboo and hug the teddy. He reached over and stroked Jonas's neatly trimmed hair. Fun doesn't end when you become 12. Lily appeared, wearing her night clothes in the doorway. She gave an impatient sigh. This is certainly a very long private conversation, and there are certain people waiting for their comfort object. Lily, her mother said fondly, you're very close to being an 8, and when you're an 8, your comfort object will be taken away. It will be recycled to the younger children. You should be starting to go off to sleep without it. But his father had already gone to the shelf and taken down the stuffed elephant which was kept there. Many comfort objects, like Lily's, were soft, stuffed imaginary creatures. Jonas's had been called a bear. Here you are, Lily Billy, he said. I'll come help you remove your hair ribbons. Jonas and his mother rolled their eyes yet as they watched affectionately as Lily and her father headed to their sleeping room, to her sleeping room, with the stuffed elephant, Willow, that had been given to her as a comfort object when she was born. His mother moved to her big desk and opened her briefcase, Her work never seemed to end, even when she was at home in the evening. Jonas went to his own desk and began to sort through his school papers for the evening's assignments. But his mind was still on December and the coming ceremony. Though he had been reassured by the talk with his parents, he hadn't the slightest idea what the assignment the elders would be selecting for his future, or how he might feel about it when the day came. We did it. Oh God, I forgot that I loved this book. It just feels like nostalgic, I guess. Anyway, honestly, we read 30 pages. This is not a very long book. This is a 225-page book. Made a good dent in one day, so this will probably be a short recording, and we'll get back to Dante not too long from now. But thanks for listening, angels. I hope you enjoy this. I know this is a departure from what we were just doing, but I'm always happy to read to you guys. Love you all very much. Take good care of yourselves, because I care about you. And sleep well.